Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey, he's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, when you hear that song, that's Renegade by Styx, it should get your blood flowing, but a little bit more this week than other weeks. And I know a lot of people are going to say, Jeff, you're crazy. It's the preseason. It doesn't even matter. I disagree with that. It does matter. It matters why? Because it's football, people. I'm Jeff Hartman from behind the steel curtain. Normally, Lance Williams joins me for our show, The Standard is the Standard, but if you've been following the Steelers in training camp, they're dropping like flies. Lance dropped like a fly tie, bringing the backup, our normal producer, now co-host just for this week, Chris Carter. You there, buddy?
The standard is the standard, and I got to step up to the plate.
Exactly. It's like we have some Tomlin of them to get started. And what a better way to start. But, hey, this week, I saw this the other day on social media. I think it was Twitter, and it just struck me as something that's just pretty cool. This Sunday, or this weekend, will be the first last weekend that we won't have football until the month of February in 2016. How cool is that, right?
Oh, that feels so good. I can't, you know, baseball's okay. I can live with, like, with the Buccos. You know, just football in your back. I thank you so much. I think I have an issue because it's that bad. But I'm not going to argue with my issue once football season has returned.
Well, here's the thing. For me, I was just talking to some people today about this. I can watch the Pirates and the Penguins every single game they play, 162 and 82 games, without missing a beat, without getting sick of it at all. I can't sit down and just watch any NHL game. I can't watch the Vancouver Canucks versus the Calgary Flames. Or I can't sit down and watch the Arizona Diamondbacks play the, the Houston Astros in a meaningless baseball game. Exactly. If there's NFL football on, I don't care if it's the Tennessee Titans playing the Jacksonville Jaguars in London, England. I'm tuning in. Why? Because it's football. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We have a lot of football talk. I think it's just important that we start this show off with kind of the way I led in, with injury. If you've been following the team, obviously this show is airing on Wednesday, August the 5th. There were some big injuries today in practice. Two main injuries that we'll speak of. The most significant, and that's exactly how Mike Tomlin labeled it, was to safety Robert Golden. Now, Robert Golden was a special teams captain in 2014, not really known for his work in safety. However, when you look at the state of the Steelers' safety depth, this is a significant injury, especially in the fact that it's the preseason, and we're going to talk about that depth in a second. The other injury was to Chris Hubbard. Chris Hubbard found himself as a second-string interior lineman on the depth chart that was released yesterday, and he went down with a leg injury, although Tomlin did not say it was as serious. He said it was more about camp bumps and bruises. Still, any injury is significant at this point in time, and I think the perfect example of that is if you look back to last year, safety Mike Mitchell, his first year with the team, suffered a groin injury just prior to training camp, ended up lingering the entire season, and next thing you know, he's getting surgery after the year. Other than that, there's just been a laundry list of injuries, whether it's Ryan Chazier nursing a lower back pull, whether it's a biceps injury to Jarvis Jones, it's kind of had him in and out. Shoulder injuries to D'Angelo Williams and to safety Shamarco Thomas. Will Allen has been given veteran days, with almost some regularity. James Harrison hasn't even put on shoulder pads yet. Heath Miller, same thing, very off and on in terms of, I call them the sweatpants squad. And so when I write the recaps of training camp, I say, oh, two more guys joined the sweatpants squad. Like Ben Roethlisberger was with the sweatpants squad the other day. He didn't play at practice. My question for you, Chris, is what are your thoughts on the injuries? Is this something to be concerned about? I mean, obviously, Robert Golden, the safety situation, which we're going to talk about, I think it's very significant. But is as a whole, as a team, after 1 week of training camp, what are your thoughts on the injuries?
I mean, well, right now there is a serious question of depth at the safety position, partially because, and well, not partially, in large part because there was already a question mark at the starting position of the safety spot in this defense. Mike Mitchell did not prove himself as a free agent last season. Many people felt that he underperformed. I would also agree, but you give him that extra year because, you know, it does take people some time to adjust to a new defense, especially the Steelers defense. Now you have Jamarco Thomas, who's been injury prone through his short career so far. So, you know, he's a liability, you know, if he gets hurt. But you know, now with Mike Mitchell in trouble, you got Robert Golden. That's a tough call. I am a little concerned because if Mike Mitchell has another situation where he's lacking, I do believe that the biggest money in his contract was for his first 2 years. The first 2 years won't be very different from his last 3 years because he signed a 5-year contract. And if he doesn't prove himself this season, the Steelers might feel like they want to part with him or trade him away for something cheap. I am very much concerned with the safety depth. Then you also have the question of what's going on with Saquez Golson. With his shoulder injury, how bad is it? What's it, you know, what does it dip into? And, you know, when we look at the corner situation, another spot that, you know, got a few question marks to it going into the season, Cortez Allen, you know, will he stay healthy? So far, he's looking good. William Gay, you know, he's been a bit of an iron man for the Steelers. I don't think he's missed a start since he's been every year that he's been on the team. But then, you know, behind that, and you have, you know, Antoine Blake, and you got the Durant Grant situation, the B.W. Webbs. You know, you got a big mix up there. So I am a little concerned for the safety situation. Hubbard, you know, if he's a depth guy, that's one problem that we ran into last year. We had no depth in the interior line or the defensive line. That's why we had to go get Kiesel. And then with linebackers, that's why we had to go back and get Harrison. So definitely right now, injuries, they're not something to, you know, lose your mind about and run around screaming the sky is falling, but it is something to say, okay, how are we going to manage this? Who are we bringing in? See who steps up at camp and even in these preseason games, who looks like they're giving their best effort, following technique and making plays.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the one thing for those people, and there are these people out there that almost are seemingly on the ledge, ready to jump off the bridge with some of these injuries. I mean, Robert Golden's significant injury could be just that significant. Saquez Golson, there's rumors of some serious shoulder issues, and he could be done for the year. That's significant. Shamarco Williams' shoulder is not probably going to linger. Let me just give you a few things to just step you off and get off the ledge, calm yourself down, take a deep breath, and realize this is an extended training camp, people. Training camp. They got an extra week because of the fifth preseason game against the Minnesota Vikings, which will be coming up Sunday. We're going to talk about that in a second. But it's not yet time to hit the panic button. Because let's be honest, look at the safety position, which is obviously the most glaring, obvious weakness or concern in terms of injuries that the Steelers have currently. And you have a guy like Will Allen. Well, they know what he can do. He's a veteran. He's been in the system for a long time. Mike Mitchell, believe it or not, you kind of know what he's capable of doing, although you'd like to see more. He's put off 16 games last year. There's not much that he has to prove so much in the preseason. He needs to prove it in the regular season, not so much in the preseason.
Exactly.
Shamarco Thomas is a guy you'd like to see get some repetitions, especially in that third game, you know, where they play almost a half. But when I say they, I mean the starting defense. But other than that, hey, put Gerard Holyman out there. I want to see that kid tackle. If he has to play four quarters on Sunday against the Vikings, put him in there for four quarters. I don't care, because guess what? If he can't tackle, it'll become blatantly obvious that he's not capable of playing at the NFL level. It makes your job easier as a coach. I think if you look at guys like Isaiah Lewis, Ian Wild, they're their three safeties that they have left on their depth chart because Ross Centrone is out with an ankle injury as well. Forgot to mention him. And you look at him and say, let those three guys rotate through, you know? Put them out there. You're football players. You want to play. You want to prove yourself. Here's the perfect chance to do that. So I think that's kind of like the flip side of this injury situation. And Tomlin even said that the other day at camp. He said, look, sometimes I sit guys based on the fact that I want to see more of others. He doesn't need to see James Harrison. Why would you?
Exactly.
Hey, I heard Jim Wexel from SteelCityInsider.com said earlier today, if it were up to him, he wouldn't play at all in the preseason. They give him the Adrian Peterson treatment. You don't touch the football in live contact play until the games actually count. I'd be okay with that. I don't need to see James Harrison. You know what? Go onto YouTube, type in James Harrison Super Bowl interception, watch that about five or six times, get all giddy and say, you know, I'm good. I've seen enough James Harrison. I mean, let's be honest. So
right.
I think that really what you have to look at is just, you know, I put this question out on Twitter. I'll say we got a couple of responses here. Nick, he wrote, he's not really concerned, although staying close to Golson, he is a little bit, but the acquisition of Brandon Boykin, not so much a concern anymore. We're going to talk about Boykin as well. Some people are just putting yes, they are very concerned. Well, the majority of people are saying no. It is a concern, but at the same time, let's see how the preseason plays out before we start hitting any panic button in terms of, you know, what we're trying to do. Now, we do have someone special on the line. This is Lance. He's finally able to pull himself together and actually become a part of the show that he used to co-host with regularity. Now it's kind of up in the air. Lance, are you there? What's your status for this evening? Are you good for the rest of the show?
I'm good to go, man. I've been struggling to make it, so I'm here, ready to go. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, I have camp body, little bumps and bruises here and there, just trying to get prepared for the regular season, going from the gym, you know, and, you know, just trying to get my body right and ready for the rigors of the season.
I know that you're doing those James Harrison workouts, aren't you? I mean, you're getting in there, you're putting up like 500 for effect, right?
No, I'm definitely wearing the weighted vest, and I have the 100-pound medicine ball when I'm playing beach volleyball. You know, I'm definitely doing that. You know, my vertical leap is now at about, you know, a paltry 15 inches. You know, so I'm definitely old black guy can't jump, but you know, I'm trying to get there. I'm working myself into shape, man. I'm getting there.
All right.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you called in, Lance. But what we were talking about, we're just getting ready to move on. But I want to give you a chance to chime in. We're talking about injuries, and if you haven't heard about Robert Golden suffered, as Mike Tomlin called it, a significant knee injury today. Chris Hubbard went down as well. The safety position, especially, is extremely thin. Are you concerned about the injuries through camp so far, or do you think it's more just Tomlin's taking it easy, playing it cautious? What is your two cents in the injury situation for the Steelers right now?
Well, injuries are absolutely the most important thing in the game. So having this many injuries is a concern, but it's not a real concern until it becomes to a signature player like a Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger or Le'Veon Bell, somewhat of that ilk. Although Robert Golden goes down, his impact is much to the depth of the position. However, losing him doesn't impact the season right now. And as a golfer, Jeff, you know the adage, you know, don't lose the tournament on the first day. Post a score, stay in the tournament, don't lose it on the first day. So we haven't had that type of injury where the Steelers' season is in jeopardy this early in camp.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm superstitious. I'm knocking on wood. Everyone just heard that, and everyone knock on wood that we haven't had that injury. And I say we, I mean the Steelers, knock on wood. Now let's move on because, hey, the injuries, the depleted nature of certain positions, the secondary is certainly one of those, and the cornerback position and the defensive backs are certainly unbelievably criticized on the Steelers team, and rightfully so, in my opinion, if you look at how poor they played in 2014. You looked at the depth going into this season, and you saw William Gay as a starter. I think he's kind of entrenched himself on the outside, even though I still think he is one of the best slot cornerbacks in the NFL today. But he's going to be on the outside. You hope and pray that Cortez Allen returns to 2013 Cortez Allen. And then you had Antoine Blake as your third cornerback. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm a little skeptic. Nonetheless, I was not comfortable with those three. If Sanquin Golson was in the mix to vie for that number three spot, I would have been a little bit more confident. But even still, that's a rookie. That's a rookie that you're saying, okay, I'm confident in him going out and playing against the Ravens in a meaningful game at the end of the season, or going up to Foxborough if Tom Brady plays and going up again there and playing well. Then they go out and get Brandon Boykin. Now, let's talk about a couple things here. And, Lance, I'm going to go to you first, and I'm going to go to Chris. I want to know, A, were you happy with the trade? B, were you excited and do you think it's going to better the team? And then lastly, do you think that they gave up too much as a conditional draft pick could be a fourth-round pick? And the fact that a guy is in his contract year and will need a new contract if he wants to stay with the Steelers next year. Lance, do you remember those three questions? You get all that?
Yeah, I think in terms of compensation, a conditional pick, who cares? You know, there are some Steeler fans out there that are the draft Nick type guys. They covet every pick because presumably this fifth round pick is going to become a Hall of Famer of some sort. You know, I'm not one for squandering picks, but it is a conditional fourth rounder. Who knows who that guy will be? Could be a bust, could be a good player, whoever. Play the percentages. And that compensation isn't bad. In terms of why they do the deal, I'm with you, Jeff. The cornerback position isn't great. And I don't think they felt comfortable with who was in the room. And, you know, that's why they do it. They bring in a guy that they think can make plays. They look at the guys in that room, and they're shaking their head. They're like, the cupboard is pretty bare at this position. And we don't have an alpha male, alpha dog at the position. As far as Boykin, the player, I have some stats here. Why don't you, CC, why don't you jump in, give me your thoughts, shoot it back to me, Jeff. And I just want to give you guys some stats in comparison of Boykin to Gay and Allen to prove the type of ball player and how good Boykin can be and the impact that I think he's going to have on the Steelers.
All right, Chris, go ahead. Let's shoot it to you. What do you think about the trade?
My thing with Boykin is that he's a young guy. He's 25. I look at this at the trade as, you know, you're giving up a fifth, potentially fourth round draft pick. And remember, the condition is on how much time he sees, and if this guy ends up seeing a lot of time for us and turns out to be really good, then I think, you know, a fourth round draft pick would have been good to add that to the lineup. But I think that this was a move, sort of like a Bryce McCain move. This guy's still on his rookie contract, so it's not like he's, you know, taking up a lot of space. He's gonna be playing to get in the starting lineup. Potentially be the number three guy, or the guy that we always put on the slot. And I mean, he's made some plays. You know, 2013, he had six interceptions. That was like, you know, his premier year. Now, Eagles fans will tell you that he was very disappointing last season, and that they were. Some people were glad to see him go. Some people weren't glad to see him go. I think it was a great move because you put him into a situation where now we do have some depth to work with. Because, like I said, I agree with you. I think Gay fits our he reminds me of Deshae Townsend. You know, he's not a superstar, but he knows his role. He plays his role well, and he works well in the system, and can make plays in the zone schemes. Now that we don't have an Ike Taylor on the field, you know, Cortez Allen, is he going to step up? If he doesn't step up, well, guess what, guy? We have someone right behind you looking to take your spot. And that's not including Fenquez Golson if he can get healthy, or Antoine Blake, who, you know, has become an undrafted free agent that we've come to like. So I like the move. It adds depth to a position that we really need depth at. It's the first week of training camp. Who knows what injuries could befall these players if Boykin's fitting in there. And again, fourth, fifth round draft pick, unless someone knows of a sleeper right now that is going to be called next April, that'll be in the fourth or fifth round pick. I have no problem with this trade.
Yeah, now before I go back to Lance, and he's going to give us some good statistics here on the difference, or I guess on how Boykin kind of fits the scheme well and how his statistics show he's going to be a benefit to the team. If you want to call in the show, you can at any time. The phone number to call in is 347-850-8581. I'll say it again, 347-850-8581. Call in, make the conversation discussion. You have a question, you have a comment, you just want to spout off about, I don't know, anything Steelers related, go ahead and call in. Lance, go ahead and take it away with the stats. Are you ready?
Yeah. Now, I took a look at some stats on Pro Football Focus, and by no means should anyone use Pro Football Focus as the be-all to end-all. I would encourage all of you guys to definitely go out there and watch the player, form your own opinion. But they do a good job of tabulating and grading players on a per-play basis. And the numbers I'm going to give you guys is based on guys that play 25% of the snaps at the cornerback position. And the overall ranking of the three corners, Boykin, Gay, and Allen, Boykin ranks 21st, Gay 31st, and Allen 103rd overall. In terms of coverage, Boykin is 19th, Gay is 28th, and Allen is 97th. Now, the end for all you statistical nerds out there are the number of cornerbacks that we're talking about when we talk about this 25% of the snaps. Now, the end is 108. So overall, Cortez Allen was ranked 103rd out of 108 corners. In terms of penalties, Boykin 50, Gay 14th, Cortez Allen 101. In terms of completion percentage, Boykin 63.6, Gay 61%, Allen 59.6, and that ranked 66th, 49th, and 45th, respectively. In terms of quarterback ranking, Boykin rated at 77.2, Gay 93.3, Cortez Allen a whopping 106.8. The rankings for those three, respectively, 28, 66, 84. And last but not least, yards per catch, the average 10.7. 14.3 and 16.2 in the order of Boykin, Gay, and Allen. And the rankings are Boykin 19th, Gay 92nd, and Cortez Allen 101st. So when you listen to those stats, Boykin is arguably the best cornerback on the roster. When you implement him into the program and you get him on the field, you can see that if he plays to the level that he played last year, the impact on their secondary should be tremendous. This is just from a statistical standpoint. You know, you don't know how he's going to fit into the scheme. Will he be injured? How he's going to play? How his game translate? But just looking at statistics, he's a vast improvement to this secondary.
Yeah, no, I agree, and those statistics are telling, and anyone that watched the Steelers last year knows how horrible Cortez Allen was, and he's atrocious. If they weren't throwing at him to complete passes, they were throwing deep to draw penalties. It just seemed like every single time he was on the field, and that led to the demotion, and then he got injured, and we all know how that played out. I think for this season, 2015, I think it's a great trade. And, you know, fourth, fifth round, it's going to be a fourth-round pick, barring injury. It's going to be a fourth-round pick that they're going to give up for him. I think it's well worth it. I mean, you're going to get a guy that's going to be able to come in and play right now. It's not like you're trading for a rookie. Now, here's what scares me, though, because I'm a long-term guy. I shouldn't do this, but I do. I always seem to look a couple years down the road. So when a player signs a new contract, I look at, okay, he's locked up until what year? I look at players and I say, okay, who needs a new contract now? Who's playing in a contract year now? And who might be looking at a new contract down the road? And so I look at that and I'm saying to myself, okay, this guy's in a contract year. He's due, I believe, $1.5 million. It's the last year of his rookie deal. Now, with that being said, the following defensive backs on the Steelers roster are going to be up for free agency after this season. William Gay, who you said coming into the season was the best cornerback on the Steelers roster. Boykin, and Antoine Blake, who signed a restricted free agent tender for 1 year this year. So that kind of has me a little nervous. I mean, because let's be honest, yeah, they drafted Doran Grant, and yeah, they have Sanquez Golden. Are they gonna hitch their wagon to two rookies or second-year players next year? I know I shouldn't be looking this far ahead. I should be focusing strictly on 2015. But at the same time, you guys might agree, you might disagree. This scares me down the road because, yeah, you might hopefully they can sign Boykin or they can sign Gay, whoever might have a cheaper price tag. But at the same time, the secondary is not getting any better. It doesn't seem like it, at least. And you got to keep these players that are decent. They have Cortez Allen locked up, which by the stats that Lance said, well, that's just phenomenal. We just locked up the worst cornerback in the NFL for another 3 or 4 years. So, I don't know. Lance, what do you think?
I think your concern is warranted. And you speak about Cortez Allen. I think in terms of a cap hit, I think he has the fourth highest cap number right now. So he has to play better. The only way this works moving forward is Cortez Allen plays better and one of the young guys develops. But you have to have one guy that you can hang your hat on in that secondary. And the unfortunate thing for them is if it's Boykin, can they afford Boykin? Will they pay Boykin the money knowing that Cortez Allen is taking up a significant portion of the salary cap, I think around $6.5 million. So you have cause for concern. But in the immediate future right now, they just hope Boykin can play because they have no idea if Cortez Allen is going to bounce back. And a secondary of Allen and Gay is not good enough to win a championship.
Okay, is a secondary of Gay, Allen, and Boykin?
I wouldn't say it's good enough, but I think it gives you a chance. I think with Gay and Allen and a young Shamarco, I don't know how much of a chance you have. You'd have to put a lot of pressure on an offense to put that secondary in good situations where they're playing with leads. You know, is that a secondary that can make a play in a close game that you might have to win inevitably to get over the hump to win a championship? That would be asking a lot for that group. You know, we're talking about Boykin, the infamous candy bar. You know, you throw out Gay, Allen, Shamarco, that's a lot of candy. You know, that's the fun pack of Snickers that you get on Halloween.
Damn. Yeah, yeah. What say you, Chris Carter? What do you think about this whole situation?
I think people got to remember, put it in perspective with Cortez Allen. Do people remember what happened to Ike Taylor? The year after we won the Super Bowl, he had an interception in the Super Bowl. Everything was looking gravy. And in 2006, was completely abysmal. He got benched. I mean, he was getting picked on. It did not look good for him. Cowher was not happy with Taylor's production, sat him down, and afterwards he sort of stepped up. And yes, Cortez Allen got chewed up. If you look back into the middle part of the season when he was trying to play, especially if you look at that Colts game, you know, he made some plays on the ball, but he also got roasted way too many times. And he has to step it up. But there's nothing to say that he won't step up. He's a young guy. We signed him to a contract, so he's on the team for a while. I think you got to give him the time to see what he does this season before we say that, you know, he's one of the worst. Because also, Pro Football Focus is their whole ranking of cornerbacks. A few years ago, Bryce McCain was listed as like a top 10 corner in the league. And then that immediately dropped, and then he was made to be the worst quarterback the very next off season. So their statistics are very, what have you done for me lately? And I hate using that to determine someone on negative statistics. You know, on good stuff, it's like, okay, you did that. What are you going to do next? But, you know, people have bad seasons now and then. And Bryce McCain, and if you look at last season, you know, the Steelers secondary was not good. In the sense that, you know, we could depend on them. But they did make plays for us. They kept us in game sometimes. I mean, the pick six against the Falcons was huge. The pick six against Luck was extremely huge. It helped set that early tone of this is going to be a blowout. And then they still intercepted him when he was trying to pull off a crazy comeback. I think this secondary has potential. It's not as bad as everyone is going to think it is. But this secondary will look really good if the pass rush returns. If this pass rush returns, I think people are going to be saying, man, we've signed Boykin to 5 years. We need to make sure that we lock up William Gay. Or Antoine, there's Shamarco Thomas, who knows? But if the heat comes, the secondary will look good. If the heat doesn't come,
It'll look just like it did last year. They'll make some plays, but they're going to get torched. You can't give quarterbacks in this NFL too much time to work. So that's where I stand. I don't think it's like really, really bad. I don't think it's good, but I think that William Gay is a solid role player. I think Cortez Allen could develop, and I think Boykin's a solid free agency pickup. And I think Antoine Blake could be a really good player. He's fast. He seems to be tough, and he makes plays on the ball. He had a huge forced fumble against the Bengals, which helped us lock up the division in Week 17, if anyone remembers that. I think Blake is just as much of a competitor to be in the secondary rotation, and, you know, maybe even a starter at some point. The only thing against him is his height. So I'm not against this secondary. I think that they have a chance, but I don't think that they're in a great spot right now. But, you know, we got 5 weeks till the start of season.
Well, let's look at it this way. Here's what the Boykin acquisition does. It gives them options. If Cortez Allen comes out and completely sucks it up like he did in 2013, they have options. They can move Boykin to the outside, or they can keep him in the slot, and they can put Blake on the outside, where Blake is actually more comfortable on the outside anyways. So they have options now, whereas before, you know, with Golson out of the picture, because let's be honest, it's not looking good. With Golson out of the picture, if Boykin weren't there, if Cortez Allen goes down, who are you turning to? You're going to have Blake come in, and you're going to have who? B.W. Webb, Kevin Fogg, Doran Grant as a rookie. I mean, I think Doran Grant's going to be solid, but he's not going to step in and make plays for you. It gives them options, okay? Now, let's move on. I want to talk about something else now. I want to move to a little bit of contract talks. Now, Cam Hayward just got a new deal. He's locked up. I think he was the top priority. If you were listing the priorities in the offseason of re-signing or extending players' contracts, Ben Roethlisberger was the top. Cameron Hayward is number two. And then a lot of people were discussing who should be number three and who should be next for the Steelers in terms of giving out some money. I think that most would agree that the left tackle, Kelvin Beachum, who has a seventh-round draft pick, is making a dismal like $1.4 million this year. And he's, as Lance used Pro Football Focus, he was a top 10 left tackle in the NFL last year. They have already reportedly started the base talks, contract negotiations, if you will. At the same time, you look at it, you know the Rooneys don't do deals once the season starts. There's a time stamp on this thing. Outside of Beachum, because I think we'll all agree that Beachum would be next, who would you want to sign after Beachum? Now, I'm not saying that's not a possibility, but who's next on your list? It might not happen in the preseason, but after the season, is it a guy like William Gay? Is it a guy like Ramon Foster? Because the offensive line is a unit now. That could definitely be different next year. Is it a guy like David DeCastro? That's what I want to talk about. Chris, go ahead. Who would you go? I'm going to go with you first, and I'll go to Lance. Who would you look at? Well, first, I guess I should ask you, would you say Kelvin Beachum should be next on the list?
I think Beachum needs to be on the list, but honestly, I am looking at DeCastro. And I like Beachum for what he's become. I mean, he's become a great late-round pick. But I really think that DeCastro could be a monster. He could be a Fanica type of guy for us. As his career rolls on, he's young. He's really, really strong. This guy and him and Pouncey could be a 1-2 punch of the interior that will drive people insane for the next good 8 years of NFL football. And I think he could be a really big time franchise player, a player that, you know, many people will come to love and appreciate and will be regarded as one of the best offensive linemen in football. I think Beachum is a very talented guy. He's not big, which is his biggest, that's the biggest liability that comes from it. He doesn't have his, you know, it comes against like bigger guys with longer arms. That's his weakness, but his technique is so solid. And when he gets his hands on you, you're done. So I want to get Beachum, but my first priority is getting David DeCastro. And, you know, I played guard in high school. I love the way he pulls. I love the way he hits and his tenacity. If you ask me on first person, I got to sign right now. Next up, it's gotta be David DeCastro.
Looking at the two contracts right now, Beachum's cap number is $1.5 million. DeCastro's cap number is at $2.4 million. The big difference is DeCastro's under contract in 2016, but the cap number for him in the final year of the deal is at $8 million. Of course, this is Beachum's last year, and given the value, you know, you look at Beachum's contract, he has the 75th highest contract of 87 tackles. Given that he was drafted in the seventh round, I think you do this deal first, Beecham's deal. I think you do that deal first because I don't think you want Beecham to have another year and get to the open market. They're not going to franchise him. You know, he's going to be a free agent next year. So I think they do the Beecham year. I think they do the Beecham contract this year. They'll do the David DeCastro contract next year to get that $8 million number down. So you do Beecham now. It won't be a huge contract because he was drafted in the seventh round and he's only costing you 1.5 on your cap right now. They could easily probably do that deal this year and worry about DeCastro next year. So I'm thinking you do Beecham first.
Yeah, because DeCastro is in the same situation that Cam Hayward was in. They had the fifth-year club option picked up as a first-round draft pick, and I think Cameron Hayward was due $9 million this year. Then they did a new contract, which obviously lessened their salary cap hit. I think DeCastro is it, but I think people have to remember, look at the offensive line. Offensive line is a unit that everyone's talking about is up and coming. They've gelled. Mike Munchak has been doing his work. He's like a magic man, you know? And I think at the same time, you have to look at the fact that, okay, DeCastro, Beecham, Ramon Foster, three of those five players are going to be coming up for contract negotiations within the next few seasons, if not at the end of this season, not to mention Mike Adams, their backup swing tackle. Now, whether he makes the team because of a back injury, well, that's yet to be seen. Could very much be in flux. I mean, a strength of this team, and let's be honest, they've kept Ben Roethlisberger relatively clean the past two seasons, and there's a correlation between the success of the offense and Ben Roethlisberger staying upright. Does that concern you guys at all, the fact that the offensive line, I mean, they've kind of been ignored. I mean, look at the depth. Mike Adams is, as I said, the tackle. Cody Wallace is like that versatile interior lineman. Chris Hubbard, who went down today with an injury. Yeah, they drafted a couple undrafted guys. Or I should say they picked up a couple undrafted free agents like B.J. Finney, the Mukes and all those guys. Lance, what do you think? Like, as offensive line, I mean, not looking that great for the future, in my opinion.
I think they'll try to keep this unit together. You've got Kelsey under contract. You've got Gilbert under contract. I think regardless of the order, I think they're going to keep Beecham and they're going to keep DeCastro. I don't like the depth. I think they're going to move on from Ramon Foster. But at least for the first five guys, I think they feel comfortable with what they have going into the regular season. But I agree with you from a depth perspective. And that's the good thing about these five preseason games. And that's the good thing about some of these injuries, that some of these young guys at a variety of positions, offensive line being one of those, are going to get an opportunity to prove it. Because right now, with the offensive line starting to gel, you know, that's what you don't want. You don't want that injury because I think, and I'm of the mindset that this team will be as good as that offensive line plays. If that offensive line plays better than it did last year, watch out. Even if it plays as well as it did last year, watch out. So as the offensive line goes, this team goes. So depth is a concern.
Lance, real quick, do you have the salary cap numbers up for the team in terms of how much they're due with each year when their contract's up? Do you have that information in front of you right now?
I did have it, but I don't have it up in front of me, though.
Okay, if you could look that up real quick, I want to swing this over to Chris. I want to come back. You have a couple questions about some big-time players that are going to be due contracts here in a few seasons. Chris, what do you think about the offensive line? The depth, you heard what Lance said. It was pretty much true. The way the offensive line goes seems to be the way that this team goes in terms of protecting Ben, opening holes for Le'Veon Bell. What are your thoughts? Are you concerned moving forward with the offensive line?
I love the offensive line. I wrote about this, I think it was two summers ago, when Kevin Colbert, David DeCastro was really young. Pouncey was still being the man, but still young. And they were working fine, you know, with Marcus Gilbert, Mike Adams, you know, who would that would be. But Colbert came out and said, this is like a young pack of horses. Together, they're all by themselves. They are really powerful. A lot of these guys could succeed on their own.
but you need to give together the time so they can get on the same foot, get that rhythm together. And that's something that, that happens with every offensive line. You can have five stalwart guys who are extremely good athletes, get off the ball, move defensive linemen, change the line of scrimmage, and win those battles. But if you're not moving in unison, in sync, and you don't have that chemistry, it's not going to work as well. You know, you're going to run into problems. Timing is so key on the offensive line, working together. I mean, and that's the offensive line is a huge reason why football is the ultimate team sport. You know, they, these guys have to work together to make everything work for the offense. And if one of them fails, the whole play can be shut down immediately. And with the big four that we have right now, in Beachum, Pouncey, DeCastro, and Gilbert, those guys are young. Those guys look like they could be on the team for a while. I think that we could lock up Beachum for a reasonable price. I think DeCastro is going to take some money, and if I had to choose an odd man out, it would be Ramon Foster simply because of his age. And I think we can get another guard that that could work. You know, whether it's in free agency or whether he's on the roster right now or whether we go get him in the next draft. But I love the status of the offensive line. I think Foster's a nice, wily veteran for what he is. Not to say that, you know, I want him to go, but if I was to pick, you know, a guy out of the starting five right now, it would be him. Pouncey is a perennial Pro Bowler. The one time he didn't make the Pro Bowl is when David DeCastro took him out in the first drive of the season. And David DeCastro really looks like he's come along. Marcus Gilbert, not elite, but very solid. And I think he's become more of an asset than a liability. And Kelvin Beachum, we were just talking, I think he's one of the best offensive tackles in, you know, in football when it comes to technique. Just his size can play against him. And it's so crucial. With this offensive line takes over and becomes, you know, a well-recognized unit, even if they're not recognized. And I prefer if they don't get recognized. So that means that we can sign Beachum for cheaper. We can sign DeCastro for cheaper, you know, and you know, let them fly under the radar. But if they're bullying teams front line, giving Ben a lot more time like they did last season and open up crazy holes for Le'Veon Bell so he doesn't have to make, you know, 30 insane moves a game. He just has to make, you know, 15. Then I think this team is in a really good place. And it's going to make winning games, especially in the red zone when everything really counts. I think it's going to be – I think they could be a big asset, and I think they could really help this team go way deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. You guys bring up some good points. Lance, do you have that information handy?
Yes, I do.
Okay, now I want to look at some of the premier players that the Steelers are going to have to be thinking about renegotiating or giving them new contracts coming up. And there's two players that are in mind. That's Le'Veon Bell. When his rookie contract finishes as a second-round draft pick, he's not going to have the fifth-year club option. And Antonio Brown. Because I know there's a spike in Antonio Brown's cap hit, I want to say in 2016, correct me if I'm wrong, when do you see those guys taking priority? Because I think they do at some point. They have to.
Well, Le'Veon can't get a deal till the end of next year. You've got to play 3 years before you can get a new deal. So Le'Veon's okay. That would put Le'Veon to the 2017 season. So they don't have to worry about him then, till then. Antonio's cap number is high now. It's at $9.7 million. So, you know, at some point they're going to have to deal with Antonio because Antonio's going to outplay his contract. So they're going to have to possibly redo that or revisit that, I think, next year as well. Looking at their cap structure, the other thing you have to factor in when you look at their cap and how it's structured and who is owed what or what the cap hit is for some of these guys, that, you know, Lamar Woodley is still on the books for $8.5 million in dead money, and Troy counts for $4.5 million in dead money. So I believe that Lamar comes off the books this year, and I think Troy will come off the books this year too. So that's some space that they'll have in 2016. So from a contract perspective, I think they look pretty good moving forward, the way everything is structured. But going back to their cap situation, and when we were talking about Cortez Allen is at $6.9 million against the cap, and that's the fourth highest on the team. He has to perform to that number. But from a cap perspective, they've got everybody you know, the cap numbers look really good. I mean, Cam Hayward's cap number is at 6.4. Heath's is down to 5.6. You know, penalties is only at 4.2. And, you know, Sean Sweetsum is within the top 10, and his cap hit is at 3.6. So they've done a good job with really managing their cap over the last couple of years. Once Woodley is off the books, it'll really look good. And, of course, the highest cap number is Ben Roethlisberger at 17.2, and Lawrence Timmons is at 12.5. And they're going to absolutely have to do something with that number next year as well to get that down. I could see a restructure there or him being cut next year, depending on how well he plays, given the depth behind him at the inside linebacker position.
Yeah, okay. Now let's get away from the geek stuff, the salary cap, the number game, and let's just talk about something that's just fun. I mean, it is just fun because you know what? There's no winning and losing in this topic. You know, we're going to talk about Jerome Bettis. We're going to talk about Jerome Bettis getting into the Hall of Fame. And I can honestly say it's been a long time since I've been this geeked up just to see a guy stand up and get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it's probably because this is like the first player of my era, of my lifetime, that I followed that was really, truly great. Now, I know Darmani Dawson got in a few years back. Centers just don't get the love like someone like Jerome Bettis. I mean, Jerome Bettis embodied the Pittsburgh Steelers. And so what I did is I went on Twitter and I asked everyone, I want to know what your favorite Jerome Bettis moment is. And I think anyone with a brain that saw all these games, especially in 2005, they're going to point to one play, and that's when he ran over Brian Urlacher in the snow en route to making the postseason, en route to winning Super Bowl 40, and en route to him basically riding off into the sunset. But I'm going to go ahead and give you my favorite Jerome Bettis moment first, and then I want you guys to go. And this is going to go back, I want to say, in 2001. And it was a Monday Night Football game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Tampa Bay, they were good. Keyshawn Johnson was down there. Brad Johnson was the quarterback. They had Warren Sapp running his mouth. This was the game that after this game was when Lee Flowers called them, exactly, Chris, paper champions. But Jerome Bettis absolutely annihilated these guys. He rushed for over 140 yards, and if you remember, he threw a touchdown, and it was a beautiful throw. I want to say it might have been to Jay Gruner in the back of the end zone. That, to me, I don't know what it was about that game. He just ran with so much power, and he was so nimble on his feet. I mean, there's so many memories. That one sticks out to me. The Urlacher play, obviously. Let's go to Lance. Lance, what's your favorite Jerome Bettis moment?
Well, you stole my two. I love that Tampa Bay game. I still have that game on a VHS tape in my house. I love the Urlacher play, but I'm going to just go with something real simple. My favorite Jerome Bettis moment was watching him hold up the Lombardi in Detroit with him finally getting that championship, getting it in his hometown, doing it in the crib, and going out like only Jerome Bettis can do on top. That's my favorite bus moment, is when he held up that trophy.
Hey, that's a good one. What about you, Chris?
You know, the Urlacher moment was so cool, and partially because when you looked at the significance of it, Brian Urlacher was one of the best linebackers in football at the time. I thought that it was crazy when you looked at how steep of a hill the Steelers had to climb, and that was the first game. That was the first game coming out of the loss where T.J. Houshmandzadeh did the terrible towel thing, and it was like if the Steelers lost one more game, they were out of the playoffs, or they would have to rely on other people to get them into the playoffs. Man, when he came out, and it wasn't just that run, he was just carrying the offense in a snowplow game, and he did an exceptional job. Especially when he ran over Urlacher, that was like the ultimate state because he ran over a corner and Urlacher on the same play. It was pretty nasty, and that was to me like that was. And I grew up knowing who Jerome Bettis was, and I grew up knowing had love in the bus. Everybody loved the bus. I mean, in Pittsburgh, it was like nowadays everyone has a Troy Polamalu jersey. Back then, everybody had to have a Jerome Bettis jersey. And it is super sweet
to see him go in the Hall. It took him too doggone long. I thought he should have been a first ballot. I think there were several people he needed to be in ahead of, but I'm glad they finally got it done. But I'm surprised, Jeff, you said he's the first, like, one of you, you know, because you got to do, you consider Dawson, but what about some Rod Woodson? I thought even though he finished as a Raven and everything, he was the man. Like, even as a kid, I'm like, I love me some Rod Woodson. I want him to win.
I don't know. I mean, Rod Woodson, it was great and all, and I'm pretty sure I had a little static. I think that's what you said. You said Rod Woodson, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't like when he left. He played with Oakland. I mean, gosh, I hate the Raiders. Then he played with the Ravens. I mean, that just kind of – I was excited for him, but this is the bust, man. I mean, this is the bust. I mean, there's a reason why Rod Woodson's Bar and Grill closed down and Jerome Bettis's Grill 36 is still running. It's because Pittsburgh loves that guy. You know what I'm talking about? If you know, if you're from... Rod Woodson's
like
bar was great.
Man.
He had that astroturf.
I like Woodson's, man. I like Woodson.
But no, in all seriousness, though, Jerome Bettis, though, I mean, gosh, you just watch those films. Like, there's that scene. I've seen them so many times. Like, you watch the sound effects on NFL Network of Jerome Bettis, you know, where he's standing there next to Bill Cowher. He just brought him into Pittsburgh. And he is, you know what? You're my kind of guy. And this is your effing city or something like that. I don't know verbatim, but it just gives you that, those goosebumps. And maybe I'm just a nerd for the Steelers, but I mean, the game against the Bears, which everyone talks about it with Urlacher, was great because, mind you, like you said, Brian Urlacher was not first contact with Jerome Bettis. He ran over a corner, had contact with a corner, and then you watch that play in slow-mo. Look it up on YouTube and just watch Urlacher's head snap back. It's a thing of beauty. But anyways, there's the play earlier, I'm thinking later in the game, where he breaks loose and he breaks off a long run. It was almost comical because you're watching this. I mean, Jerome Bettis put on some weight back at that point in his career. He wasn't outrunning anybody. And, you know, you got Chris Hoke and Mike Logan on the sideline saying, put on the snow tires on the bus. I mean, it's everything about that guy was good. There was no controversy. There was no Ben Roethlisberger, you know, the all the allegations. There was no Santonio Holmes drug stops. I mean, you hear news now that he was selling crack and shooting to people. No one remembers that. They remember him as that fun-loving teddy bear. And I'm just super excited for this weekend. I think that it's going to be a great Saturday. That Canton, Ohio, which I have family in Canton, by the way, it's already a Steeler town. It's going to be even worse on Saturday and on Sunday when the Steelers play in the Hall of Fame game. I do want to read some of these from Twitter. Our buddies over at the Steelers and that's another blog, they said week one versus Oakland in 2004 when Jerome Bettis had 5 carries, 1 yard, 3 touchdowns. The birth of the goal line running back. I do remember that. If someone else brought up the storybook ending, it almost seems too good to be true. There's only one player I can think of that might have had a better finish, and that was John Elway. He had won back-to-back, I think, and he said, you know what, I'm done. But by all means, the Urlacher, running over Urlacher, is by far the best, that or the most voted for, if you're going to vote on Twitter. But I'm excited for the bus. I think everyone's excited for the bus to get in, and it's going to kick off a really cool weekend. And let's kind of transition from Jerome Bettis getting into the Hall of Fame to the Minnesota Vikings Steelers preseason game on Sunday, where a lot of people might say this game is going to be totally unwatchable. I'm the nerd that says this is totally watchable, because when you write about the team as much as I do and we do on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, you're sitting there and you know all these depth players so well. You know what they were like in college because you covered them in the draft, and you know all those rookies and all these second-year players and what their potential is. You end up watching guys, and I want to get both of your feel about what exactly you are looking for. Lance, I'm going to give you time to think about some defensive things to watch, and Chris, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I can help you out if you need help. Give me a few offensive things or players to watch, keys, maybe if you want to call it that, to watch here as we get under this game on Sunday.
You're talking about from the Vikings?
Yeah, the Vikings game on Sunday.
Got you. Okay. Well, if I'm looking at players on the Vikings, one player that I think didn't really catch on the way a lot of us thought he would last season was Cordarrelle Patterson. Or Cordero, as some people say. I think he's going to be a guy that we really have to that if he gets more playing time in the preseason game, you know, he's a speedster. He was a raw football player. He could be a guy that, you know, that is a problem. But it would be also a great thing because I think he's going to get locked up with some Antoine Blake. Who knows, we might see some Durin Grant. And I really want to see how they do against the quarterbacks because, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, this will be his second year in the league. They got Sean Hill at their second quarterback position. Mike Kafka is their third. I want to see them get opportunities and take advantage of their quarterbacks, and they're going up against the wide receivers of the Vikings. You know, they're not stalwart players, but they're fast. And led by now the fast Mike Wallace. I think that's kind of that's kind of funny that we're playing him in this game. Even if it's just for one drive. But, you know, I want to see how our corners match up with their receivers. Specifically, you know, depending on how long do we see Cordarrelle Patterson, and who he gets matched up with. Because I think just his speed alone will, if we got guys that are running with him and we're able to contain him and force, you know, tough throws, if their quarterbacks can hit the windows that we give them, that's great. But I want them to be small windows. I want them to be situations where it's like, if you make this throw, all right, you made that throw. But we put it so this is a difficult situation for you to convert on, and you had to be perfect to do it. And in the preseason, that's when you see more mistakes from the offense. So that's where I'm most interested. I want to see how our corners stack up against the speed of their wide receivers.
Okay, Lance, what about you? You think, to look at the Steelers defense, give me some players that you're really excited, if you're excited, to watch on the field. I think about players that might not see much time in the regular season, especially in week one of the preseason. Who are some Steelers defenders you're looking to focus on?
I want to take a look at Bud Dupree, see how he's getting off, how he's rushing a quarterback, just to get a sense of his athleticism, movement skills, and physicality. Grant, some of the other young guys in the secondary. But also, I want to see if there are any scheme tips, because we've seen a lot of talk about scheme changes, and I just want to see if we see anything that jumps off schematically that could be different. I doubt if we do, but I want to look at some scheme things as well, if we see some cover two. And the whole funny thing about cover two that everybody's talking about, like, cover two with some magic potion you can pull out of a bottle and you sprinkle two drops on it, all of a sudden you get the giant bean stock and the golden beans or the golden egg that lays the whatever. You guys know the fairy tale. Cover two isn't a magic panacea for anything, but I want to just see what it looks like from a schematic standpoint. Bud Dupree, Shamarco, and hopefully see some other young guys flying around, Grant, some of the secondary guys, and just see. But namely, even some of the safeties that play, given that Golden went down. So just some of the young guys in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the defense, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Steelers, I think six out of their eight draft picks this year were all defensive players. Outside of Sanford Golden, who's not going to be playing, there's a lot to watch. I mean, I want to see if Anthony Chiquillo, who obviously has been turning heads in training camp, is able to put something on the field that resembles an outside linebacker. He didn't play that position at Miami. I want to see Jared Holliman. You had 14 picks at Louisville. Some of them were pretty lucky. But still, is he going to roam the back end? It looks like he's going to see a lot of playing time. On offense, I'll give you a few names because a lot of those guys are not going to be playing much. I don't expect the line to be out there much. Antonio Brown, don't even dress him. Put him in bubble wraps with Le'Veon Bell and Ben Roethlisberger in the locker room and say, you guys can't come in. You can't even go to the sideline until after the first quarter. That's what I would do personally.
They're not dressed.
What?
I'm not dressing them. They're sitting in sweat the entire game. Yeah, Brown. Heck,
yeah.
Marquise Pouncey. Put him in. But I'm
And if you've made Pro Bowls in the past few years, especially this Hall of Fame game, do not touch the field. You're in the sidelines, and you're in the back of the sidelines, so no one can fall into you and there be a freak accident.
Yeah.
No, I apologize, Jeff, earlier. I thought you were asking me to talk about the Vikings offense when you were talking about leading up into it.
Hey, it's all good. I was going to talk about the fact that they were going to be playing those guys anyways. You just did it earlier than I wanted to. That's okay. Let's talk about some offensive guys. I look at Sammy Coates. I want to see where they put him on the field. They still haven't figured out whether they're going to want him out wide or whether they're going to try him in the slot. I want to see things like Dree Archer. I mean, it's going to be against third and fourth string guys, but is he going to be able to make plays? Is he going to be able to find seams? They can get the scheme that they're going to be working. Do they run a lot? That's kind of what Lance alluded to. I want to say there's a lot of people that say, well, you know what? They're just unwatchable games. You can see a lot from watching these guys. On defense, I want to see Daniel McCullers not only shove the center right back into the quarterback, but make a play when he does it. You got used to seeing him push people in the backfield and then just kind of stand there and hold them up. I want to see some of these guys perform, and some of these guys that aren't going to see the field a lot. It's just exciting for me because you get to see some of the depth of the team. And a lot of these guys are not going to be employed in a couple weeks, but still – they're out there giving everything they have to play. So I think there is a lot to watch for. The scheme, they're not going to tip their hand too much, but I think you'll see Todd Haley throw in some, you know, exotic 384 wide receiver sets, which isn't that exotic anymore in the NFL, but for the Steelers it is a little bit. They don't do that very often. I think that we really have to say, you focus on the team itself. If they win, I don't really care. I hope that they win one preseason game so you don't have to hear about all the idiots say, well, then no team that's ever gone 0-4 or 0-5 in the preseason has never made the playoffs, because I just don't want to deal with that for the duration of the season. But still, there is a lot to watch for. Now, our Twitter account has kind of blown up a little bit in terms of these Jerome Bettis memories, and some people have brought up some ones that we did not mention. I can't believe I didn't. Unfortunately, if you're talking about memorable Jerome Bettis moments, the fumble in the 2005 divisional game against the Colts certainly would be a memorable one, not for the better, but it's a memorable one. I know that you guys probably remember this. This ruined our Thanksgiving in 1998, the Jerome Bettis coin flip in Detroit.
Ugh.
Where he called heads. He said tails. Next thing you know, Detroit gets the ball. They go down. They kick a field goal to win it. We're going over a little bit of our time. I don't want to spend too much more time. I just basically want to have a final wrap-up session for each of you guys to kind of talk about whatever you want to talk about before we get into the first week of real football. And it's not real as in counts, but it's real. They're not hitting each other. They're hitting somebody else. Chris, I'll go with you first. What do you want to say?
Well, if I had to have my worst Jerome Bettis moment, it was probably – that fumble in the Colts game, because I just remember my father and I, we were so happy, and I was in high school, and we were like, well, yes, we're going to the championship game. And then when he fumbled, I remember my dad was holding this massage beanie thing. It had like a little engine in it that would like turn it on. It would vibrate when he fumbled the ball and Nick Harper scooped it up. I just remember just seeing my dad take that thing from the top of the room and slam it onto the ground. You just heard the engine just shut down. It just broke. That thing never worked again. But it was the ultimate, oh, my God. It happened. Oh, it was. And that was after in the 2000, if people forget, the year before 2004, he had a huge fumble against the Jets that almost allowed them to win. But if Doug O'Brien doesn't miss two field goals, and, you know, in Curtis Martin's swan song of a game, that, you know, that was just, oh, my gosh, I couldn't move. That was probably my ultimate low as Jerome Bettis. But yeah, going into this game, I really want to see – I think Sammy Coates is the biggest question for me. How well does he do? Does he stretch the field? Can he get out there? And you know, even equally as important is Dree Archer, because he did not have a good season, but he showed that he did have the speed to outrun people. He can get away from people. The question is, can he get to his assignments? Can he catch the ball when you throw it to him? And can he capitalize? Because the biggest play that he had all last season was called back in the playoffs when he scored a touchdown against the Ravens. It was called back on a holding call, or I believe it was a holding call, in the fourth quarter. But you know, you got to see production from this guy.
he's a third round draft pick, and you know, people, you know, fourth and fifth round draft picks, if they don't hit, it's like, ah, you know, you third round, that's like the tier above before that. 1, 2, and 3 you need to develop, and Drew Archer needs to be better than he has been, at least for me, so that we can put him in, he can become a decent spellback for, you know, for Williams when he's tired, and when we want to keep Bell off the field and we want to protect him. So I'm looking at Archer, I'm looking at Coates, and to be honest, on the offensive line, it's kind of just like, you know, who's going to step up? Does anyone want to challenge? Will Mike Adams earn a spot for the future as a sub? Because right now he looks pretty bad. But if I'm looking at the storylines, I'm looking at those. I do want to see Shazier be healthy this year. I think that's something that, you know, we'll all call it injuries. I really think that I'm really worried that if he did, because I heard he got injured in a practice recently. I was just like, he's another guy I'm looking at. You know, will he be the guy that we need him to be, or will he be spending most of this season on the sideline?
Yeah, good stuff. What about you, Lance? What do you want to say to you as we call tonight?
Landry Jones, I want to see if he's progressed. Been hearing decent things about him play in camp. So I want to see how he plays. He should get a long look considering Gradkowski is hurt and Ben Roethlisberger won't play. So hopefully all you Jones haters, hopefully he won't give you more ammunition because, wow, was he a hated draft pick. But lastly, just as a rant topic, I'm coming home today listening to the radio, and I'm firmly convinced one of the dumbest segments in all of sports entertainment is Sports Science on ESPN. I had to listen to them break down Brandon Phillips' around-the-back throw on that sweet double play last week. They broke it down to such a minute level, it was just dumb and freaking ridiculous. If he throws the ball a little bit slower or faster, he would have missed his shortstop by 9 inches. I'm like, ESPN is terrible. That's right. I said it. The four-letter network is absolutely unwatchable. It's just terrible. And that's the worst segment on ESPN and absolutely the worst segment in sports. Absolutely horrible. That's my rant.
So you're saying you didn't like the Sports Science where Antonio Brown broke a Guinness World Record of a drone going up Lord knows how high in the air and dropping a football and then talking about how a certain amount of wind pressure was going to move the ball this many yards and the acceleration rate. You didn't like that?
No. You're an idiot.
That's it.
That's
stupid.
No. No.
They do some really cool segments, though, sometimes.
The wind tunnel. If the hair follicle on my left toenail moves slightly with the isosceles of the moon as it angles towards Andromeda, he would have scored. Oh, Lord.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a rant to end on. That is a rant to end on, and I'll tell you that now. Hey, next week, maybe something will happen in the game that will piss me off enough that I'll bring out back my teed off segment to finish up the show. I don't have anything really to gripe about. I'm excited for this weekend. I think everyone out there should be excited as well. I think that we, everyone, Steelers fans, football fans, NFL fans, should just be pumped that football is finally back. It doesn't count, but it's still football. I'll take preseason football over no football any day of the week and twice on Sunday. So with that, we wrap it up. We'll see you next week for another edition of The Standard is the Standard. For Lance, for Chris, I'm Jeff. We'll see you later. Bye.